Hey guys, Brock Cannon here. This is episode number 44 of the Brock Cannon podcast, and this is my first solo episode. And honestly, you guys, of all the episodes I've done and as many wonderful guests as I've ever had, this was a very powerful moment to me, just even in recording what I recorded for today's show. I pondered some pretty heavy questions. A lot of today's episode deals with my own history of mental illness, anxiety, depression, and so forth. My thoughts, my journey, and I wanted to open up in really the most vulnerable way today with this, you guys. And at the very end, I get pretty emotional. You'll hear me on the show because there's a lot of life's questions that I both asked in question format and reflected on. And really, the question was, how do you want to be remembered? How do you want to live the rest of your days? And a lot came up for me. A lot came up for me. And I think a lot will come up for you as well. And I really spoke a lot in this episode about how important it is to really be here now. And how really so much of the source of our unhappiness, so we think, is from either living mentally in the past or future tripping about the future. When really the juice, the magic, the good stuff is in the moment now. And I talk a lot about this, you guys, and I really, really pray. I hope that this resonates with you. I hope that you feel my passion, my compassion, and my love for you and for life coming out in this episode. This is something I really tried to pour my heart out with you guys, so I hope you enjoy this. And if you have, please share it with friends and family, because there's a lot of things here that I just hope, if I died, this is what I would want you to remember from Brock Cannon. So without further ado, enjoy this solo episode number 44. Thanks for listening, guys. Hey everyone, Brock Cannon here. This is episode number 44 of the Brock Cannon podcast. Today's episode, a solo episode and the first of its kind. Yep, I've never done a solo episode. A lot of you guys have been encouraging me to do that. And you know what? I listen to podcasts as well. And I kind of enjoy when the podcast host does a solo episode, because it's kind of like they're always interviewing all these other people, and you develop kind of this relationship with them from afar, and it's good to kind of get to know them at a deeper level sometimes. So, you know, over the years, I've really enjoyed the Rich Roll podcast. I enjoy Luke Story, who has the Lifestylist podcast, and a host of many others. I'm sure you have your favorite podcast as well, and I'm humbled and I'm grateful for the handful of you who listen to my podcast. And it's certainly not a top 100 podcast by any means. I simply started this a couple of years ago as a means to talk to interesting people and to learn something. So if I can share one thing today that's of value, then my job is done. And of course, doing a solo episode is also an opportunity for me to have some self-reflection, which is great. I just finished a podcast this morning with another individual. I was interviewed on his show. A nice, interesting turn of tables. And he's a big advocate for mental health awareness. So it was really cool to kind of reflect on that and think about my own journey with mental health, my own journey with anxiety and depression, and struggling at times in my lowest of lows with suicidal thoughts. And I thought it would be worthwhile to kind of tell you guys my story today and address some of those things. Because the thing about anxiety and depression is that pretty much everybody has had moments of it. Very few people in today's world are completely happy all the time. In fact, if you're human, you're not happy all the time, because the human experience has sorrow as a contrast, which is a beautiful thing if you respect it and if you embrace it. So I want to tell you guys my story. You know, I guess it goes back as far as 16 years old. I ended up in the office of a therapist at 16 years old, sitting on the couch, because I was depressed. I was really depressed. What mistake did I make? Well, I had a girlfriend. It was very serious. I had a lot of stuff I hadn't processed with my own parents' divorce, and I ended up making the mistake of basing my entire happiness at the young age of 16 in my girlfriend, how she reacted to me, how she responded to me. I was very reactive. And if she didn't act the way that I hoped she would act towards me at that young teen age, I'd kind of get bummed out. And it got really bad, and it got to the point where I wasn't processing things correctly, and I was feeling like I was falling into a very deep depression. So I ended up on the couch with this therapist, and I'll never forget, and I don't even remember his name, but he was a great therapist for a 16-year-old, and he was like, "Hey, Brock, what do you like to do? Like, what brings you joy?" And, you know, first I was thinking, like, well, hanging out with my girlfriend. But then he's like, "No, you, what brings you joy?" And I had just gotten into mountain biking the year before. I think I'd done maybe a few mountain bike races. I got my butt kicked in those races. I wasn't fast by any means, but I enjoyed it. I was getting into this mountain biking thing. And this was in the mid-90s. And he said, "Why don't you lean into that more? Why don't you do more of that and see where it takes you?" So I did. I actually took his advice. I was like, okay. So I started training a lot. I started riding up hills. And at first I could ride up one hill. Those of you that know the Salt Lake City area, which is where my roots are from, I rode up 45th South, a really steep hill. Not super long, but it was a steep hill. And that was like as far as I could ride. And I remember I would ride up that hill every day, even in the winter, slush, snow. I wanted to get stronger. I wanted to get better at this mountain biking thing. And the more I rode up that hill, the stronger I got, as you can imagine. And then I started riding a little further. I started riding up the local canyon, Mill Creek Canyon. And then I started riding up that whole canyon and getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And then I went out the next spring as a 16-year-old kid, and I won my first three races, cross-country mountain bike races, and I felt like I was on top of the world. And it gave me something to put my confidence in, besides my girlfriend. And, you know, the blessing to that was it gave me something else as an outlet. The curse to that was that I started putting my ego in that. I started putting my self-worth in that and thinking that I was only as good as my mountain bike racing results. The problem when you win three races in a row, like your very first real season, is that you put pressure on yourself into thinking you have to continue to win all the races. And I didn't. And there was guys that, you know, at certain times of the year were faster than me, and it was really a battle. And I think I was conditioned from a very young age to start to base my worth and base my happiness on these external things. And honestly, you guys, it took me like over two decades to finally come to the conclusion that, hey, I'm enough exactly the way that I am. I don't need to base my value. I don't need to base my worth on external things, my profession, my net worth, my athletic performance, all these other things. I'm enough as it is. But that, you know, wasn't around then. So I started to develop depression and anxiety. I started to develop feelings of not enoughness if I didn't have a good workout, if I didn't have a good race, if I didn't, you know, meet the expectations that I wanted to meet. And so the battle, you know, went on for a couple of decades, and it just was like the house of cards. You know, when you start to base your happiness on external things, it's a recipe for disaster. And I look around now and continuing in my own journey, and, you know, I'm not like completely evolved or, you know, perfect by any means, but I look around and I think, wow, there's a lot of people that are kind of stuck in the same trap that I was stuck in. I see a lot of endurance athletes, actually, now that I'm more in the running space. I don't really ride my bike too much at all anymore. I run more. And I look at these people and I'm like, wow, they're like doing the same shit that I was doing. They're stuck in basing their worth on their results. And if they get injured and they're not able to run or do races, depression sets in. And it's something that's not really talked a lot about in the sports world, is this event-based depression. You know, if you don't have the results you want in an event, you kind of get depressed. And it's a real bummer. And it's something I'm trying to bring more awareness to. So anyway, going back, I think that's kind of how my depression and anxiety started. And all this stuff, and ultimately realizing now in hindsight that I was running from the opportunity to process my feelings and to process my emotions, literally running or riding away from it. If I felt like I was stressed, if I had anxiety, I would just go for a long bike ride, or eventually I would go for a long run as I got into ultra running later. So that wasn't good. And it's like people think that it is good, but it's not good. And now it's kind of like I'm to the point in life where I'm not as fast as I used to be. I'm not as skinny as I used to be. But I don't feel like I'm really running or keeping in shape, insert any activity. I don't really feel like I'm doing it for the wrong reasons anymore. I feel like I'm doing it to just genuinely enjoy nature and to keep in shape, you know, to take care of my body. But the trap, the allure of just results, 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 next race, next race, next race, it can become an addiction. It might not be heroin. It might not be alcoholism, but it's an addiction. And I see a lot of close colleagues around me that are caught up in it. So, no judgment. I never seek to judge anyone, because I've had a lot of experiences where I don't have any right to judge. I've done a lot of stupid things in my life. I made a lot of mistakes. But let's talk about like how that evolved. You know, so I remember a couple years back, I was having this anxious day. So what does anxiety look like? Well, you feel unsettled. For those that have severe anxiety, you know what I'm talking about. Your heart feels like it's beating out of your chest. For those that really have anxiety, you have these things called panic attacks, where you can't get a hold of yourself in the moment. You start to spiral so out of control with your thoughts and with your thinking that you panic. And you're like, holy shit, there's nothing I can do right now. Really, I think one of the things anxiety is the fear of loss of control. And as humans, we want to control everything. We want to control the climate in our house. We want to control our schedules. We want to control how we feel during the day. God forbid we feel sad or unhappy or unpleasant or tired. We want to control everything. We want to control other people. That doesn't work. None of it works. So, a couple of years back, I was visiting in Utah. I live in Santa Barbara, California now. I was visiting in Utah. My two daughters still live there. I was back visiting, and I was having a very, very anxious day. I had all the thoughts spinning in my head. I had all the anxieties, and I couldn't control it, and I was going nuts. And I went for a run in the mountains of northern Utah. I was just outside of Park City, if you know where that is. And it was a beautiful winter day. Clean air, sparkly snow, and I decided to go for a run because running usually helped kind of calm my anxiety. That was all I knew at that time. And I'm out on this beautiful country road on a run, and I can't get out of my head. I'm like completely stuck in my head. And I'm tripping out about all these situations going on in my life, and I was having a lot of personal problems at the time, relationship issues and all sorts of stuff. Stuff that I had caused, which now the wreckage was, you know, causing distress. And the running wasn't helping. So I'm out and I see this beautiful meandering river that's half frozen, half flowing next to me. And I don't know if you guys have ever had just like a quick intuitive hit or a little voice that talks to you and whispers like, hey, try this, do this, make this move. But that hit me really, really hard. And what this little inner voice was telling me to do is to jump into the frozen river. And of course, my logical brain kicked in and thought, hell no. It's like 20 degrees outside as it is. It's cold. That's not a good idea. But it kept coming back to me. And I just had this impression that I needed to jump in this river. And I remembered this guy that I'd seen on a YouTube video almost a decade before named Wim Hof. Crazy Dutchman, nicknamed the Iceman. And I remember the video when he was running around on the ice and he was meditating in the ice and he was going in cold, freezing water. And I don't know why. You know, it just came to my mind. And I thought that would be a good idea for me on that particular day. So I can't fight the intuition anymore. I'm trying to push it aside. I'm still running along this road. And I surrender. I get to the end of the trail, and I'm like, I'm going in this river. I had no training. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. I didn't know anything about cold exposure or the benefits of it or the science behind it. I just had the voice tell me that I needed to jump in this damn river. So I get to the end of the trail. I strip down all my clothes off, and I jump in like a crazy person. I jump out, and I'm like, whoo! You know, making noises, I'm not calm. I'm just like, it's pure adrenaline. And I get out and I made all the mistakes that you're not supposed to make in terms of proper cold exposure that the Wim Hof method teaches. I go in the car and I blast the heat, which you're not supposed to do immediately after cold exposure because it actually makes it worse. That's a whole other story. But I sat in that car, heat blasting, and I took witness and observation of my body and my mind. And I realized in that moment that I felt empowered. I felt like all of the worries suddenly were gone. Because the cold was so cold, it was such a brutal teacher, it was such a shock to my system. I felt so invigorated. I had this buzz on my skin, this tingling on my skin, that I was like, holy crap, there's something to this. And that was my first unofficial exposure to the Wim Hof method. I didn't even know there was like this whole community of people all around the world that jumped into ice water on a regular basis for their mental health. I just knew I felt better. So I was in Utah for 6 more days. Every single day, I wanted to go out to a different place, a river, a lake, a stream. It was the dead of winter, and I wanted to get in the water because it felt like it was working for me. I knew that the second that I got out of that water, something was happening to me where I got out of my head and I got back into my body. And for years, I had been trying to get out of my body. I had been trying to escape. I would ride my bike to escape. I would run to escape. I would look at porn to escape. I would smoke weed to escape. I would take alcohol to escape. I did everything to escape. I tried to seek attention from other people to escape. And all of a sudden, I'm in the cold water, and you cannot escape when you're in the cold water. You're just fucking there. You have to be. You're just there. And it's like really, really stinging. And you're just there. So I kept doing the cold plunges the week I was in Utah. I reconvened with my fiance Shannon, and she's like, hey, maybe it'd be a good idea if you got some formal training. Like, maybe so you don't get hypothermia or fall through the ice or make some stupid mistake. Like, maybe you should get some formal training. Have you heard of Wim Hof? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, check this out. He's got, like, courses. You know, you're obviously committed to this. You've been doing this. Maybe you could become an instructor. So I was like, awesome. So I'm very, very thankful. I have Shannon to thank for leading me on the path of becoming an instructor, which I am today. It's changed my life in every single way. The practice has changed my life in every single way. And all of a sudden, I was feeling the benefits of what it meant to come back into the body and to not try to run away anymore. And it was through the Wim Hof breathing, it was through the cold exposure that started to bring me back into the moment, and it started to bring me back into my body, into my own self, to where I didn't need to escape anymore. And previously, you know, I'll just say this, like, without any judgment to anyone, all things in moderation, but I had periods in my life, you know, years ago, where I was taking cannabis every day. Every day I'd wake up, I was a wake and bake kind of guy. I didn't really smoke it that much. This is maybe a whole other, like, episode. I just did a video yesterday on why I quit marijuana. But I was taking it all the time. I was taking like 50 milligrams. Yeah, 5-0. 50 milligrams in the morning. And I was kind of just numbing out. And I was drinking a lot. And I was drinking a lot of coffee. Like 40 ounces a day of coffee. And you know what happens? The more you take substances, the less they work. So you keep taking more, and it's this vicious cycle. So I started taking cold showers. I started taking ice baths. I started plunging in nature when I could. And I just felt so alive. And I would do the breath work in the morning. And all of a sudden I was like, I think I'm good. I don't think I need to take all this stuff anymore. And I literally quit cold turkey. For months and months and months, I quit cold turkey. I felt so good from the Wim Hof method. Just breathing, doing cold exposure, being conscious and being in my body, being in the moment. And the anxiety, because I'm human, has not gone away completely. But it's brought it under control more than anything that I've ever done in my life. Now, where am I today? Years later. I have a cup of coffee in the morning. I make my plant-based version of a bulletproof coffee in the morning and sip it and really enjoy it. I go in phases with drinking alcohol. I typically will have a glass of wine at night for dinner. Just a glass. I'll have the occasional cocktail if it's a nice, like, thoughtfully crafted cocktail out at a nice restaurant now and then. But I don't really take cannabis ever. If I have like a nagging injury and I'm actually in a lot of pain, I might take a tiny bit before I sleep, but that's usually pretty extreme. But the breath work is a daily, the cold exposure is a daily, the process of being able to sit with myself and with my feelings is a daily. And I think so much anxiety is created in humans because we're unable to sit with our feelings and our emotions. We're scared of what's on the other side. We're scared to feel bad. We're scared to feel sad. We're scared of those quote-unquote negative feelings when really the surrender to the acceptance and knowing that all emotions are a beautiful part of the human experience is really, really freeing. That's liberation, in my opinion. So no more escaping, no more running. And, you know, today, I still have anxious moments, but they're pretty far and few in between. I have stress. How do you not in today's world? Especially with our political climate and all the crazy stuff happening. How do you not have some stress? How do you not occasionally future trip worrying about stuff? But what happens now when I start to go down that path is I just breathe. And it's so simple, you guys. But if you just breathe, if you bring your awareness back to your breath, and look, you don't have to do the Wim Hof breathing. There's dozens of types of breath work. The important thing is that you just do one of them consistently, or two or three of them. They're just tools in your toolbox. But if you learn how to breathe, you can bring it back to the moment. And you realize that all we really have is right now. And you know, it's funny, as I record this, I'm sitting in a room on the second floor of our house, looking out the window. And for Santa Barbara, it's a gray day. It's cloudy. It's not particularly warm and sunny today, which is kind of like the exception for Santa Barbara. Usually it's pretty nice and sunny and perfect weather, which is why it's so expensive to live here and why people live here. It's perfect weather most of the time. But today's a little gray. But I'm not really trying to escape that today. I'm sitting and looking and just thinking, wow, I'm in the moment right now. Like, this is cool. This is beautiful. This feels a little bit refreshing today. You know, it's like 63 degrees. It's not hot. It's kind of just like refreshing. It's a nice welcome difference from the perfectly sunny day. It's all good. And I really believe that so much of my anxiety and suffering for years happened because I was always trying to be or feel something else. So this mindfulness shit is really important, guys. This stuff is like really important. To be in the moment. There's a reason people are really like preaching this these days. Be in the moment. It's all you have. And you know what the fucked up thing is? Excuse my French. Most people, most of the time, are not in the moment. They're either thinking about all the shit they have to do in the future, or they're thinking about their past and their regret, or how they wish they were somewhere else. And so 80% of our thoughts, I would venture to say, are not even in the moment. We're thinking about the past or we're thinking about the future. When the moment, the juice, the good shit is right here, in the moment. Take a second right now. Seriously, do this with me. I don't care if you're driving. You can do this. Just take a second right now. I'll do this with you. Just take a deep breath in. Like, deep breath in through your nose. Expand your belly. And and let it go. Take another deep breath in. And let it go. The thing about the breath is it brings you back to the moment. It reminds you that you have this heart that's beating tirelessly for you all the time, that you usually don't even pay any attention to, and you usually don't even give any gratitude to. It brings you back to that moment. Like, wow, I'm here. I'm alive. And you know what? One day you won't be. Now, I don't know what you believe. Maybe most religions or spiritual beliefs have some kind of belief in an afterlife, or that our soul continues or something like that. Most religions do. Some people believe this is it. This is the end. You're done. So even more, if you're an atheist or whatever, agnostic, you just believe that this is it, this is the end, all the more reason to just be present and fully enjoy the moment. Be here. Stop worrying about stupid shit. Seriously. Forgive yourself for what you did 5 years ago. Call your brother up who you haven't talked to for 5 years because he pissed you off at the Christmas party years ago. All the more reason to be in the moment if you don't believe that we continue after this mortal life. And even if you do believe that we have another life or the soul continues or whatever it is, why would you not want to, like, drink this life in fully? And the reason we get so anxious or depressed, one of the main reasons, is because we can't just be here. Look, you guys, I'm still learning this. I have moments every day where I'm like catching myself. Like, what are you doing, Brock? Like, why can't you just be here right now? It is what it is. Shannon, my beautiful partner, says that all the time. And sometimes I hate that saying. It is what it is, because I always thought, like, all right, well, you have the power to change it. If you don't like it, you can change it. But you know what? Sometimes you can't change it. Sometimes it really just is what it is. Today, the clouds are out. The ocean's going to look more gray and bleak. But it is what it is. Just be here. Just be in the moment. Stop trying to run to something else. Stop trying to distract yourself. If you're tired, this is so big for me, you guys. As an entrepreneur, as someone who's been self-employed, who's had to hustle to, like, make money to eat, I've always thought, like, I gotta have the energy. I gotta just go, 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 go. I gotta have, like, 100% creative capacity and work ethic all the time. And I'm here to tell you guys that's bullshit. Because you shouldn't. You're not gonna feel energized all the time. That's why there's, like, a multi-billion dollar industry with caffeine and energy drinks, because we think that we have to be, like, jazzed up all the time. That's why, like, college students are hooked on Adderall. That's why people take cocaine. We think we have to be up all the time. It's so stupid. Go out into a forest in nature. Look at a fallen tree. What tells the history of a tree? The rings on the trunk. And you don't need to be a botanist or a scientist or a naturalist to understand that you can see that in certain years, based on the rings of a tree trunk and their growth cycles, that some years they grew a lot more. And some years they didn't grow very much at all. Maybe some years they didn't reach for the sun that much. They just kind of grew a little bit. And that's like every single thing in nature. It just has cycles. It has times where it's growing more than others. When it's good, when there's water, when there's sun, when there's good air, they take advantage of it and they grow as much as they can. And then on other years where there's maybe not as much sun, it's a drought, they just do what they do. They don't grow as much. And nobody looks at those trees and is like, "You got problems, tree." No, nobody's like judging the tree. Nobody like looks at the tree and says, "You disgust me. You are so imperfect." I'm looking at a bunch of trees right now. Like, I don't, like, who does that? Who looks at trees and it's like, "You're the most like ugly, worst looking tree I've ever seen. Because you had a bad year, you didn't grow enough." It's ridiculous. But yet we do it all the time to ourselves. And we judge other people all the time. The problem is humans, for centuries and millennia now, we seem to think that we're separate from everything else. We seem to think we're superior over all of nature. Boy, is that wrong. We're just part of it. We're just part of it. So, are you going to spend the rest of your life struggling to be separate from nature? And fight against it, and try to control all your shit, and try to keep everything in a nice, neat little box, and be depressed and anxious, and totally bummed out when something doesn't go the way you think it should go? Or are you going to choose to just be more like the trees of nature, and just realize you're a part of it, surrender to the moment, let go of attachments. Let go of all your expectations. And just start to be here. Start to be present. Putting your phone down and stop acting like every stupid message you get in on Instagram or Facebook or a text is an emergency when your kid's trying to talk to you. Or your spouse, or your partner, or your friend. Just be here. And you know, death is really the great teacher, you guys. Death wakes people's shit up. But we can't ever seem to get this lesson. Because we all think, because of our ego, that we're going to be immortal for some reason. We hear about people dying every day of all sorts of stuff. Honestly, it doesn't even matter what they die of. People die. But like, we put labels on death. Like, oh, if someone dies at 42 from cancer, it's worse than someone that just dies of like whatever other cause at 82. Because we think, oh, they could have had so much more life. Maybe that's true. But the fact remains, like, we all die. And I'm not trying to get morbid and, like, sad on you guys, but just think about it. Like, when someone dies in our life, what do? Death makes us ponder the living. It brings us back to the moment. It's a gift. And for a lot of people, it's a wake-up call. How many times have you heard about people that, like, quote-unquote, beat cancer and came back? Or they should have died. Or they did die. They went to the other side. They saw the light. And then they, like, resuscitated on the table in the hospital, and they came back. And then they dedicated the rest of their life to, like, living fully and doing good. We hear about that all the time. But, like, we forget about it really quickly. So, I think I want to just wrap this up by saying, you guys, it's a cliche question. I guarantee you've heard in some self-help book somewhere. But I'm going to ask it again. Because it's an effective thought in bringing us back to the present moment, into living. If you had 6 months to live, if you knew you would be leaving this planet, this human experience, in 6 months from today, how would you be living? What would you do? Who would you be? How would you contribute to the world? Who would you say sorry to? Who would you spend time with? That's a big one. What adventures would you do? Where would you want to visit? Would you write a book that you've always wanted to write? What would you do? Who would you be? Think about it. Think about that. Because guess what? You don't know. I don't know when your time is. So why not just be here? Why not just enjoy? When you go outside, be that person that's like, oh my God, this flower is beautiful, and stop and smell it. Touch it. Be that person that's like, oh my God, look at the sunset. Even though you've seen thousands of sunsets. Be that person that smiles at perfect strangers because you can. Be that person. When you're eating a meal that just tastes amazing, that's like, oh, this is really good. That's like savoring each bite. Can you imagine if you knew you weren't gonna be here tomorrow to enjoy like the most delicious brown butter raviolis? You would like really, really enjoy those. You would like completely savor those. Insert your favorite food. It doesn't have to be brown butter raviolis. But like, you know what I mean? And I'm gonna call myself out. I'm so guilty at just like eating too fast and like not enjoying food and just being like, oh, I just need to eat. Like, I don't enjoy food the way that I should. And I need to more often. Like, Shannon took me to this restaurant last night in Topanga Canyon, down there, you know, outside of LA. And it was really, really good food. And I think I tried to appreciate it as much as I could. Like, we had this, I don't even remember if it was tuna or like yellowtail, but this appetizer. Oh, and it came out so beautiful, like it had little garnishes on it, and the sauce was amazing. And I was thinking, like, wow, like the preparation that went into this is outstanding. And I really like tried consciously to savor that first bite. And then I just like devoured it. I was like, throw mindfulness out the window. I just like devoured it. But it was really good. And you know, where in our lives can we start being mindful of the little things? Is that in food? Is that in just taking a drink of water? Is that in just like when you're waking up in the morning, stretching your arms and your legs and just being mindful of how good that feels to stretch? Instead of like, ah, oh, another day I have to get up, this sucks. To being like, oh, wow, I'm here. There's a blank canvas in front of me today where I'm alive. Touch your body and feel grateful for your body. I don't care if you are the ideal weight you want to be. You're alive. Be grateful for your body. While continuing to take care of it and maybe sculpt it the way that you desire, be grateful for your body. I'll never forget. When I was younger in my 20s, I was riding with a dear friend named Jeremy. We were on our bicycles. I was a full-blown cyclist training every day. And I went for a ride with Jeremy, and I was in Salt Lake City, and I was tired. This was to be a recovery ride where we weren't going super hard. We were just letting our bodies recover, but I was tired. I remember I was tired. I had done this exhausting workout the day before. I really didn't want to be on the bike. I was just doing it because that's what I had to do. To be a cyclist, to be competitive, I had to go for a recovery ride. So it's more of a flat ride. We're out, and I don't know what happened. I start complaining. I'm like, oh, I'm so tired today. My legs feel like lead. I'm exhausted. And literally, within seconds of saying that, I'll never forget, we were on 2300 East, if you know Salt Lake City. Going along, we passed this 7-Eleven, and on the right, right after I say this, there's a guy in a wheelchair struggling to push himself along the sidewalk. We both noticed it. We both continued to ride. Jeremy gets really quiet. He turns to me and in a somber voice says, well, at least we got legs. Because this person in the wheelchair didn't have legs. Did I go quiet? Wow. Perspective. Somebody always has it worse than you. Somebody has it. Here's the thing. Somebody has it worse than you, and they're fucking happier than you. They're complaining less than you. Our house cleaner, this sweet little Mexican lady named Gabby, she probably doesn't have like the financial stability and like comforts that we have, or the resources, but she is so happy. Her husband does handyman work and landscape work. He's done work for us too. They're so happy. He drops her off in his little pickup truck. He's got all his, you know, landscape tools in the back. blasting is like little Mexican music. You know? And they're just happy. We always pay her a little extra because we feel like she does so much for us. She's so fair. And it like brings us so much joy to just have a clean house after, you know, a crazy week. We're about to have a baby, and she brought us... I'm getting emotional. She brought us a blanket and three little receiving blankets today. This woman that makes not that much money. She goes out of her way to bring us a baby gift. Probably spent 30, 40 bucks on it. And yet she makes 100 bucks, 120. So we pay her a little extra for 4 hours of grueling cleaning. She brings us a gift. And, she's happy. And, you know, there's people that have brought us nothing, you know? Like, we have everything we need. Like, we don't need anything. Like, but this house cleaner that makes hardly any money brings us a gift. That says everything right there. So who do you want to be? Who do you want to be? You're not going to live forever. Your days are numbered. How do you want to live? It's really simple, if you think about it. As Michael Singer says, he's one of my favorite authors, author of The Untethered Soul and The Surrender Experiment. He says, it's really simple. Do you want to be happy or do you not want to be happy? It's really that simple. That's what he says. So next time you catch yourself being in a situation where you want to complain, you want to go into a full-blown pity party, you want to take offense to somebody, I'm working on that one right now. Not taking stuff personally. Ask yourself the question, do I want to be happy or do I not? And if you say inside of your soul, which I guarantee if you're like me and you're like every other human on the planet, you want to be happy. Because that's what people always say. I just want to be happy. They say to their teenage daughter, I just want you to be happy. Honey, I just want you to be happy. So if you really want to be happy, be happy. Be in the moment. Stop letting life stress you out so much. And just accept it for exactly what it is. Accept it for the gray skies that it has sometimes. Accept it for the black hurricanes that it has sometimes. The hailstorms. The really crazy shit. Because it's really, really easy to appreciate life when every day is sunny. It's not so easy to appreciate life when it's gray. Do you want to be happy? Thank you for listening with me today, you guys. Ponder these questions. If I can help at all on your moral journey, if I can hold space for you, if I can help you be in the moment a little more, serve you in any way, let me know. Reach out to me, send me an email, send me a message. I'm not some big shot celebrity. You guys know how to find me. Take advantage of what you have left every day. Be happy. Peace. Thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for listening. And if you've listened through the entire episode, thank you. Really means a lot to me, you guys. I hope that you were able to feel my passion and my hope for everyone listening, especially towards the end of the episode. And, you know, you never know the impact that you're going to make on anybody. Many of you listening have made a huge impact on me. And, you know, again, some of you know that for about a year, I tabled my podcast. I didn't think that anyone cared. I didn't think that it mattered. And so I appreciate many of your encouragement to start it up. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening, guys. It means the world to me. So if you've enjoyed this, if this hit home, if something landed for you, if something was a huge aha moment for you, please forward it to family or friends or a coworker or somebody that's been dealing with, you know, mental illness, anxiety, depression, something heavy. Hopefully there's something in this episode that lands for them. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite platform, guys, whether that's Spotify or Apple or whatever you listen to these days. I really appreciate it, and I hope you guys have an amazing week. Until next time, peace.